Hello, it's Ed Gamble here from the Off-Menu podcast that you're currently listening to. I am on tour now. The show is called Hot Diggity Dog. Make sure you go and get yourself a ticket. I'm probably coming to a town near you if you live in the UK and Ireland. And Ireland, Dublin and Belfast. Do go to edgamble.co.uk, buy yourself a ticket, and I'll see you for an evening of Hot Diggity Dog.
Hot Diggity Dog!
Thank you, James.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Off Menu podcast, taking the cod of humour, dipping it in the batter of chuckles, and then deep frying it in the hot oil of the net.
That was the voice of Ed Gamble. My name is James Acaster. We own a dream restaurant and we're inviting in a guest every single week. And we're asking them their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink, not in that order. And this week our guest is...
Professor Brian Cox. You got to say the professor bit, man.
Otherwise, they think it's the guy of Succession.
Yeah, it's Professor Brian Cox.
Yeah, Prof Brian Cox.
Oh, that's who you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's why I was
saying fuck off all morning. You've been shouting fuck off all morning, haven't you?
Yeah, I was like, everyone told me I was being rude. I was like, come on. Clearly, everyone else isn't a fan. Yeah. Well, I know what's going on.
No, it's the Professor Brian Cox.
Yes.
First scientist we've had on?
First scientist we've had on.
I hope we're clever enough
to have a scientist on the podcast. I reckon scientists appreciate inquisitive minds.
Yes.
I think we just go into this fully, you know, we just be inquisitive.
We've got a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Professor Brian Cox is on tour. He's going to be chatting about that a little bit. He is doing an arena tour, James.
Yes, briancoxlive.co.uk for tickets. It's very exciting.
It's a world arena tour. He's all over the world.
Arena tour. I mean, I'm looking here, Brighton, London, O2 Arena.
Wow.
Edinburgh, Cardiff Motor Point, Dublin Free Arena.
It's an arena tour the likes of Elfast, which we can't even imagine. The universe is infinite and so is that tour.
Yeah, but don't think that there are infinite tickets available.
No, you need to snap up your tickets quickly.
In there.
Very excited to speak to Professor Brian Cox, but of course, if he picks a secret ingredient which we have agreed upon, he will be removed from the restaurant.
Sorry.
We're turning off the gravity and kicking him out.
This week, the secret ingredient is... Space Raiders.
Space Raiders.
Hey, we were spoilt for choice this week when it came to, you know, foods that we could associate with Brian Cox.
Yeah, Milky Way, Mars, Galaxy.
Galaxy.
Yeah.
Star Bar.
Mini Eggs.
What?
Huh?
There's a lot. Yeah. I mean, you really do realise when you sit down and think about it how many chocolate bars are named after the planets and the solar system. I don't know why that is.
No, weird.
Also, Cox Pippin.
Yep, Cox Pippin.
I suggested.
We've gone with Space Raiders, which is a doubler for me because I hate Space Raiders.
Wow.
I hate any corn-based crisp posers.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Hate it.
Interesting. I like them.
Yeah, because
also, recently, what? Yeah, because what?
Of course you do.
Yeah, yeah. Recently, I watched... You ever watched Snack Wars? On YouTube?
Yeah, I've watched Nut Wars on YouTube.
When they get people to try like British Snacks versus American Snacks.
Yeah.
Steve Carell did it.
Yeah.
He chose Space Raiders as his favourite of the whole shoot.
Did he?
Yeah, but he called them Martian crisps. Couldn't remember the name.
That's funny.
He said, I liked the Martian crisps.
Yeah. It's the perfect secret ingredient for Professor Brian Cox.
Yeah. Perfect.
But hopefully he doesn't pick them, because we'd love to chat to him and pick his brain.
Yep. We're going to come out of this wiser and cleverer,
yes.
I think.
I'm on tour. Ed Gamble, Electric, doing the Edinburgh Fringe in August, and also all over the country again from September. Check it out. Big shows in London, Manchester, Dublin, Belfast, Glasgow, but many, many more besides.
And you can buy James Acaster's Guide to Quitting Social Media, Being the Best You Can Be and Curing Yourself of Loneliness, Volume 1, wherever you get your books, or pre-order. I don't know when this is going out.
But now this is the off-menu menu of Professor Brian Cox.
Professor Brian Cox.
Welcome, Brian, to the Dream Restaurant.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome, Brian Cox, to the Dream Restaurant. We've been expecting you for some time.
Here we are.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the decor, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Can we start with that?
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
The thing is, look, you've seen the wonders of space, Brian, and a genie just exploded in front of you, and you're like, give us a second, I want to talk about the decor.
Yeah.
Well, I thought, they'd have made an effort. You know, like you said, sure. Maybe a view of a galaxy or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, look, this is your dream restaurant. If you want us to pop in a view of the galaxy, you're most welcome.
It should be like a Star Trek holodeck. I want to be in space, surrounded by galaxies. That's what I think. So no visible furniture of any kind. That could be invisible. That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it? Invisible table.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be
able to. Yeah,
it's difficult.
You've got to just like judge where the edge is.
Yeah, you're going to make a judgment.
There is an edge to it.
Yeah.
Well, the universe, we're not sure.
Oh, yeah, to the universe. I'm talking about the table.
We know there's an edge to the table.
The universe
right?
may be infinite.
Don't tell me, Brian, that tables are infinite. You're going to blow my mind too early in the podcast.
Well, yeah, the universe, arguably, you could consider it as an infinite four-dimensional table.
Yeah.
That's the good point. Although one of the dimensions would be time.
Right, sure. But. Well, I'm trying to keep up with this.
Yeah.
Sometimes do you lie there at night and do you think like, well, I'm really gutted, I'm never going to know for sure?
No, the opposite.
You love it.
Being a scientist is, if you do research, then the idea is you're excited by not knowing. It's kind of an obvious statement in a way. But I know that there are two types of people. There's one sort of person that really wants to know. And actually then make stuff up, which is, because they say, well, I think... We don't even know the universe began. We don't even know if the universe had a beginning. Mm-hmm. We know there was this thing called the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago. Mm-hmm. But the answer was that the beginning of everything? Is we don't know. Yeah. Now, that's either exciting or terrifying. or you can make something up.
Yeah.
But the scientists, I think, are people who just think, well, I'm excited that there's something that I don't know, and therefore I'll try and find out.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you feel that way about genies as well? Like, with genies like me, I can make any food, get any food from any point in your life, make you your dream meal.
From wherever you want in the universe.
Is it exciting for you that, like, you can never understand genie law and what makes me so magic?
Yeah, I think you violate the second law of thermodynamics, which is one of the most fundamental physical laws. So I actually don't accept that you exist.
Wow.
So that's going to make it a very tricky episode.
the second law of thermodynamics is the thing that says that everything tends to get more disordered. Right. So it's but I was in a band called D-Ream years ago, and we had a song called Things Can Only Get Better, and that's wrong. It's the opposite of that. So second law of thermodynamics is things can only get worse.
Is that why you stopped doing music? Because you didn't agree with the titles?
Yeah, I was deeply... subsequently, I found out it was a terrible error. I would not have... Now, my integrity would prevent me from playing on or being involved in that song. I love the band, actually. Peter Cunn is probably listening, so I'm joking, Peter, of course. I do
Peter,
love the band.
I'm trying to remember, because getting onto the subject of food from D-Ream, I'm trying to remember if it was on Shooting Stars or... No, not Shooting Stars. Actually, you know what I think it was? I think it was... Have you ever been in a sketch with Trevor and Simon?
No.
Oh, what was it? There was something that I saw with you on it, and someone was saying, I've made you a... C-Ream cake. No, do you know what? It wasn't even that. It was D-Ream on
Oh,
Live and Kicking.
No, you're
right. And Trevor and Simon had made them a C-ream cake.
A cream cake. You know, we did so many of those.
Yeah, cream cake.
We did so many of those strange breakfast programs and kids programs.
Yeah.
And it was the early 90s. So, yeah,
I think Trevor and Simon made you a C-ream cake.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really funny.
I mean, yeah.
As a kid.
I think the majority of comedians our age, the first time we really laughed was at Trevor and Simon.
Yeah. Very funny.
And this is what's happened straight away. You're talking about the infinite nature of the universe, and we've immediately shifted the conversation to Trevor and Simon.
Well, imagine though. I mean, so the universe did produce them.
Yeah,
it's one of the great mysteries. Not only them, things as complex as humans.
If there's anything in life that irks you or vexes you, it's just quite nice to put it in that context of, well, the universe produced this, and then everything seems wondrous again.
It's one of the great mysteries.
Yeah,
it's a good question on how many planets did collections of atoms come together to think and do the things that we do and eat and make food and do comedy and all those things.
Yeah.
And the answer might be on very few, because there are 400 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. There are 2 trillion galaxies in the observable universe. And it's a reasonable assumption that there might be very few civilizations, maybe one per galaxy on average. In fact, a friend of mine, great physicist Sean Carroll, I asked him that the other week on our Infinite Monkey Cage. I'll plug that as well because, you know, there you go. It's the BBC. he said, on average, he thinks there are no civilizations per galaxy.
Wow.
On the average, none. So it could be just us.
Imagine if it is.
In the Milky Way galaxy.
That would be mad.
But it's all mad, right? Imagine if it is just us, mad. Imagine if there is other ones out there. That's mad.
Yeah.
To think another planet out there who are knocking about.
Arthur C. Clarke said that, the great Arthur C. Clarke, who, you know, co-wrote 2001, Stanley Kubrick. And he said there's only 2 options, either we're alone or we're not. And each one of those is terrifying.
Yeah.
You're like Arthur C. Clarke.
I'm like Arthur C. Clarke. I mean, imagine if those other planets don't have the Beatles. Well, we're the one that's got the Beatles. That's pretty cool.
Imagine if we didn't have the Beatles. I've just had an idea for a film. Benito, write it down.
Put it in. Everyone forgets the Beatles.
I've got Danny's number.
Also, you said you're doing a plug for Infinite Monkey Cage, but we want people to know about your brand new Arena World Tour as well.
That's true. That's actually the reason I'm here, isn't it? I always get confused and never plug the thing I'm supposed to plug. But yes, we just finished actually in the States. So I did 2.5 months, came back last week.
Wow.
And that was 50 shows or something in the US and Canada. So we're rehearsed now.
I mean, for most people, a world tour is pretty massive. To you, it must seem relatively small.
It's limited in scope. There are 20 billion potentially Earth-like planets in the Milky Way.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of room to get out there and do some more
gigs. It takes so long to do this one. I mean, you've been 2.5 months just in one country. You must be like, oh, God, I hope they don't open any venues on planets.
It's
going to go on. It's going on until at least March next year as well.
Wow.
So at least.
And does the tour change a lot as you're doing it?
It's going to change because there's a telescope called the Webb Space Telescope, which is up there. You might have seen it unfurl. It was just this incredible thing that was launched, and then the big mirror unfurled. It's the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, the most powerful thing we've ever put into space. And the images from that are going to be released next week, the first images. And I heard through my little science back channel things that they're at spectacular. So I'm going to have to put those in because part of the show is huge LED screens in the big arenas. It's, I think it's 30 meters by 10 meters or something of LED. And so you can put those images of the universe onto those screens and you never see them like that. And I'm told that these images are going to be brilliant. So they'll be in there. So I did that last time. Last time we were on tour, the first ever image of a black hole was released, which is an astonishing thing. There's a galaxy called M87, 55 million light years away, has a black hole, supermassive black hole in the center, 6 billion times the mass of the sun. Imagine that. It's a black hole 6 billion times more massive than our sun, into which you can fit 1 million Earths inside the sun. And so 6 billion of those squashed into something that's essentially nothing, inside of which is the end of time, by the way. So black holes, there's a lot of black holes in the show.
Yeah.
But that image, we got an image of the thing.
Sometimes space stuff sounds like a kid's made it up.
Yeah.
It is 6 billion.
Yeah, 6 billion.
He's throwing numbers like that around.
Yeah,
it's amazing. 6,000 million times more massive than our sun. I mean, the region that surrounds it, it's called the event horizon. If you go in there, you can't get out. And that's about twice the size of our solar system, just a bit bigger. So there's a region around this thing, two times or three times the diameter of our entire solar system, out to the orbit of Pluto, from which, if you go in, you can't escape.
Sometimes I don't get 10,000 steps in.
Yeah. Also, I can't even comprehend. You go in there and then you'll get to the end of time. What?
Yeah, that's
what's the end of the what? What's
it's a weird thing about black holes. When you go across the event horizon of a black hole, then space and time swap around. And so the thing that used to be, you say it's a place, it's the center of the black hole, that becomes like tomorrow. So the reason you can't get out, one way to think about it is if I said to you, now let's run away from the weekend.
Yes.
You go,
the musician.
I can't run away from the weekend. Yeah. Which direction is that?
Yeah.
The weekend is in your future and it's coming. Well, in the black hole, the end of time is in your future and it's coming. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Still a sparkling water is how we always like to start the
actually,
meal.
The restaurant, so I'm going to change it. I think we should be inside the event horizon of a black hole.
But would you be there forever then, or is that not a concept that's...
No, inside the big one, the M87 one that I just spoke about, I think you've got about 35 hours. So we'd have about 35 hours. We'd just be sitting here eating and drinking the water.
Yeah.
Sparkling, by the way, I love.
Yeah.
And then time would end.
On the M87. So what, on the hard shoulder?
That's true. Messier. The Messier. Yeah, M87. Yeah. But smaller ones, you get much less time. So really? You're better. If we're going to go in and have dinner, then we go into a big one and not
but there's 35 hours and then it's the end of time.
Time ends. Just literally time ends.
And then what happens to us then?
Yes.
We don't know. So Stephen Hawking in 1974 published a very famous paper which showed that black holes evaporate. It's called Hawking radiation. Mm. By the way, the equation is chiselled in stone on the floor of Westminster Abbey because it's so important. And that led to something called the black hole information paradox, which I talk about in the show. And ultimately it turns out that we now think that everything that falls in ultimately comes out again. Uh-huh. Which is very weird because I just said nothing can escape and time ends.
Right.
But the black hole evaporates away and our essence, right? So you're a genie, so you would be imprinted in the Hawking radiation. And in principle, you could put everything to a quantum computer in the far future and reconstruct everything, we think, which is very weird.
Reconstruct it all again?
Yeah, almost Matrix-like.
Would it have the same consciousness?
Yeah, I think that's... In principle, yeah. I mean, in practice, it's impossible.
Yes.
But yeah, so the answer to the question, what happens is, we think probably all the bits of information that are you get scrambled and somehow imprinted into this radiation in the far future.
Do you want a wedge of lemon in it or anything?
Yeah, yeah.
In the sparkling water?
Not in the black hole.
Yeah, well, you'd have to send it in. So now what we have to do now is throw... We're inside the black hole eating.
Yeah.
So you have to throw everything in.
Into the
black hole. It crosses the event horizon.
Yeah.
Then we take it. And ultimately, presumably, it would come out at some point in the far future, scrambled and imprinted into the Hawking radiation. And then we could finish.
And we could finish it all. Eat it again.
Not bad. Yeah. Good idea for a restaurant.
Yeah, you've got to wait a while. Yeah. Yeah. And they go, all the food comes out when it's ready. So it all comes out at different times. Just so you know.
Space Wagamamas.
Yeah. Space Wagamamas, man. Chisel that on the floor of Westminster Abbey. Space Wagamamas, all food comes out when it's ready.
It'd be called Hawking's Deli or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We should name it after Stephen.
So, on, where are we in the black hole or the event horizon?
We're inside now. I think we're
inside it now.
Yeah.
And how long have we got for the meal?
Well, as I said, probably 35 hours. We're going to choose. If we chose the Milky Way one, the Milky Way black hole is a lot smaller.
Okay.
It's only 4 million times the mass of the sun.
Tiny.
So we'd have a lot less time in there.
Have we chucked anything into that?
The Milky Way does. Things fall in.
Have we lobbed anything in there?
We haven't. No, I think we're in M87 because I would prefer 35 hours to...
Sure.
Well, we could do I'm not going to do live mathematics. Oh, hang on. 6 billion divided by 4 million, whatever. About that.
8.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's there or thereabouts.
It's about 1,000-ish.
Yeah.
I think it's about 1,000 times less. It'd be 1,000 times less than 35 hours, I think. Although now we'll get letters because I haven't entirely thought that through.
I do not worry. Our listeners are thick as shit.
There'll be no letters. Well, they've already gone. If they are. They've turned off.
Yeah.
They've erased it and gone to the next one.
Yeah.
What's the... You won't say what. What's the dumbest one you've done?
The stupidest episode we've ever done. Yeah. I mean,
there's a lot to choose from.
We always drag it down.
Yeah, we're a constant.
You know,
we're always there.
They've come to that one.
Yeah, whoever enabled that the most.
I'll let you know my level of intelligence. Ever since you said Supermassive Black Hole, I've been thinking, that's a Muse song.
It's a Muse song, yeah. That's what I thought. So here's the saddest thing. When you said Supermassive Black Hole, in unison, Ed and I went, Muse? Yeah. That's a song by Muse.
We didn't name those things after the Muse song, though.
No, right. No.
It's the other way around.
Oh, okay.
They took it from...
Interesting, because Muse have a lot of space-themed stuff, and I would have thought that would have inspired you guys.
It's not been around. The term, actually, it was coined by some history... John Wheeler, very famous physicist, in the 1960s. Mm. So the term black hole, describing those collapsed stars, centres of galaxies, has only been around since the 60s.
But a supermassive black hole... It sounds like not a proper scientist came up with that.
Well, it sounds like another kid thing, right?
Yeah.
Supermassive.
Supermassive black hole. Okay, we'll let that... Like a scientist let their kid name it for the day. Like going, come on, you can name this one.
Like Pluto. Pluto was named by... I think it was a competition.
Really?
And it was, I think she was about 12 years old. I can't remember her name now, but I think it was a 12-year-old that named it Pluto.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I didn't know that.
In the 19...
That's funny.
Tom, I can't remember.
That kid must have been gutted up when it got declassified as a planet. As an adult.
My one claim to fame.
Not a planet anymore? Still not a planet?
No, it's because there are lots of things that big out there that we've discovered since, out there in the far reaches of the solar system. So if you admit Pluto, then you end up with another 20, 30, 40, huge number of them.
Fair enough. Poppadoms or bread? Poppadoms or bread, Brian Cox? Poppadoms or bread?
Poppadoms.
Now, because we've been talking a lot about planets and stuff, is there a reason why you've chosen Poppadoms?
No, just...
It's related to space?
It's no deeper than I just fancied a Poppadom.
Hang on, what reason were you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking, like, if I think about the shape of a Poppadom, I think, like, oh, yeah, like, the orbiting of planets, circles and planets going round.
And it looks a bit like the surface of the moon, I guess.
Yes, it does, actually.
Yeah, they are flat. Like Saturn's rings.
Flat.
We could make a little hole in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it'd be a ring. Can you do it? That would be difficult, wouldn't it?
To make
to
them
not
all
break it.
They're very fragile, yeah.
Saturn's rings are... Is Saturn gas planet?
Yeah.
See, Ed?
Yeah?
I told you before Ed was saying it was solid.
No, I never said that. When did I say that?
He said that.
The rings are mainly water, ice.
Oh, wow.
Frozen water. And they're only about... meter thick or something like that.
I just want you to know as well, Brian, that you don't need to... We're not forcing you to connect everything with space. If
you just fancy
a poppadom, you can have a poppadom.
No, but I'm now interested in whether... This is a challenge to listeners, whether anyone can chisel the inside out of a poppadom to make the poppadom into Saturn's rings, a model of Saturn's rings, without breaking it.
Yeah, if you can do... If anyone can do that...
Well, it'd be incredible.
I send a photo in, then...
Yeah,
we'd be pretty excited about that.
I guess the only way to get a ring poppadom would be to the actual raw poppadom. Would be to cut the ring out then and then fry it.
Yeah.
And then you could have the ring poppadom. Pop an onion bhaji in the middle.
Oh, yeah, pop a bhaji in
there.
I'm going to do a competition.
Yeah.
we'll sat outside. We'll have to deal with this now.
Yeah.
I reckon you're right. If someone can actually show, and I don't want it to be reconstructed. I want them to actually cut the centre out of a poppadom without breaking the outside.
Yes.
If anyone can do that and send a video in of that, I will give them tickets to my tour.
Great.
I
think
I will go two tickets to any gig in the UK.
Brilliant.
If someone can chisel out the inside of a poppadom
written one of the tasks from series 2 of Squid Game.
Squid Game or Taskmaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the two. That is exciting. I hope that happens now when you end up with two people at a show because they cut the ring centre out of a poppadom.
I think you'd have to do it with a laser or something.
You might end up with, probably the only people who have equipment to do this are scientists.
Yeah.
So you'll end up with fellow scientists there.
And they're not listening to us.
No?
They might be listening to this episode because Brian's on.
I wonder if any scientists ever listen to us.
No way, man.
No?
Kidding me?
You think
none of our listeners have got a laser at home. They're not even trusted with a butter knife.
That's true.
I mean,
my parents, my dad used to be a chemistry teacher, and my mum's the one who listens to this podcast.
You could cool it down, couldn't you?
With poppadom.
Yeah, sort of freeze it solid.
Yeah.
Liquid nitrogen.
But then would that make it more likely to...
Well,
in
no,
my head,
really
I'm picturing
frozen.
Terminator. So if we liquid nitrogen...
I'm still thinking about Muse.
Yeah. if we liquid nitrogen the poppadom, I thought it would just go... it would just crumble if you try and cut the middle out.
That's probably true.
Oh.
It's probably true.
Benito.
You might have to liquid
knock that down.
Helium it. I don't know. It's a good question. It's another good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
What happens if you liquid nitrogen a poppadom? Does it, I mean, it'd obviously be brittle, but maybe it'd be easier to cut.
Yeah.
Or maybe you have to, maybe you have to heat it up. Maybe you have to wet it.
Maybe it's a case of scoring the poppadom as lightly as you can in the middle, right? Before you then liquid nitrogen it, and then you could just punch the middle out where you've weakened it already.
Punch it with your fist?
No, just punch it like a hole punch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or with your fist.
Oh, or do it with a hole punch. Yeah. Get a hole punch long enough and just do a little hole. You didn't say how big the hole had to be.
These are all options for you listeners.
I'm giving you ideas.
Yeah.
Man, a lot of people, I can't wait really to hear about the responsibilities that people neglect in order to try and do this. When they get so absorbed with getting the hole in the poppadom that there are several things they should have done that they don't do. What would you like for your starter, your dream starter?
Well, I thought about this and I thought, I mean, I could just say my favourite food, couldn't I? Or I could say, following the Martian,
what?
I want potatoes that I grew in my own shit on the surface of Mars. Because I thought that might be interesting. Because then I would have to go to Mars, which I wouldn't like to do unless you can arrange it, because you're a genie, so we could go instantly to Mars.
Yeah.
Plant the potatoes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we don't even need to use our own shit then, do we, I suppose? We could actually take...
But that's what he did.
Fertilizer. He did, so maybe we have to do that.
Yeah.
So I think that would be an interesting starter, and then make them into chips and have chips and take some mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Or curry sauce, because I'm from Oldham, so it'd be curry sauce, actually, wouldn't it?
You like the curry sauce?
From chips and curry sauce. But the chips have to be made from potatoes grown on Mars. In your own shit.
Thanks for the question. What's the curry sauce made?
I don't know. If I was eating, you know, if you offered me a bowl of your shit chips and then the curry sauce, I'd be like, I'd hold the sauce. I think, even though I know it's curry sauce, I need to get it out of my mind.
Yeah, I can't. I'm already trying not to think of the fact you grew the chips in your own shit. That's, the curry sauce isn't helping that.
Well, mayonnaise is real problem. Yeah.
Also, if you're existing on Mars on a diet of the very thing you're feeding me, if he's eating curry sauce all the time, his shits must be awful, and then he's growing the potatoes in him.
There's actually no condiment that wouldn't make me feel ill in that situation.
Sure.
No, I think I like the eating the curry. It's kind of a recycling thing, isn't it?
It's a constant.
Would it impart flavour into the potato itself? Would the flesh of the potato then have a curry tang?
Yeah, it would have a curry tang.
It must do, mustn't it? Because you do things like, you know, lavender honey or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bees go to like... So whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure those are equatable.
because they kind of go and eat the stuff and the lavender flavour goes into the honey. So I assume whatever you grow it in, if there are any farmers listening, I assume whatever you grow it in, somehow the flavour is transferred
it feels a bit
into the thing.
Human centipede-y, in a way.
Mm.
Eating the shit and shit.
Well, two different opinions. It's a bit like bees with lavender honey and it's a bit like the human centipede.
Both interested in insects.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get told.
I'm not going to get told. Yeah,
go on.
I'm not very good at biology, but...
One of them's not an insect,
is it
I'm
an
sure,
insect,
or both. Probably both of them aren't insects. Bees,
it's not, is it?
Centipedes.
No. Oh, no. I'm going to get in real trouble. I always get
it's a legume. It's a legume. The potatoes you're eating, is it that I'm taking you to Mars, you're growing them using your own shit, or is it that we go to Mars, the Martian Mars, and Matt Damon's made them for us in his shit, because I would want to eat... With all due respect, Brian, I would want to eat those. I would want to try Matt Damon's potatoes that he's got in his own.
You prefer his?
Yes.
I don't think with all due respect covers what you just said there.
Why?
Why don't you want to eat Brian's shit potatoes?
Because he wants a Hollywood
shit.
Yeah. I like imagining Matt Damon up there in his spacesuit and he's made him in his own shit.
Why? This is getting really weird now. So you want to imagine...
My dad is an actor, so I can imagine him in any role and I can believe him as an astronaut. And I just see Brian Cox. And I'm like, that's just Brian Cox. He took a dump on a potato.
No, you wouldn't be, because you've got to grow them. So you wouldn't be. Yes.
You don't do a dump on the potato.
No, that defeats the object of the fertilizer, doesn't it? You don't put the fertilizer on something after it's grown.
Why not?
Just
gets a big potato.
See, this is why you're getting confused. It's a lack of basic agricultural knowledge now, isn't it? Because why would you fertilise something that's already grown?
Because, flavour?
Well, and this is why it's never should it, causing
you'd
a problem, because
it well,
it's not
you?
For the flavour.
Wash it after, yeah. I hope you would wash it.
Fertiliser's not added for flavour.
No.
That's the thing.
Brian,
the
by the way, point. What you just did there happens every episode where you looked at me and with your eyes you said, help me, what's he doing? Help me out here, mate. I can't understand what this guy's
people
on about.
People who aren't even scientists that come on and look to Ed like, I really need your help here, communicating with this guy.
It's funny because the whole strange conversation of the last 10 minutes now makes sense.
Yes.
Because he's not been thinking of the shit as fertiliser. He's thinking it as a garnish. that's why it's all gone strange.
I think it's an interesting idea for a starter. Chips are good.
Yeah.
Chips. I'm trying to think of a word for
them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Chips.
I like it.
And it's all your own shit, just to be clear. Not Matt Damon's. Or a mixture. And see if you can tell the difference.
I don't think it matters. He did a mixture, though, didn't he? Do you remember in the film?
Oh, does he?
Because he used all the other...
Everyone else's shit.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah. Well, no, they weren't dead, they...
Weren't they?
Have you seen it?
Because years ago when it came out.
They didn't die. They left him on
what?
The surface.
Wankers.
Great starter.
The chits. Your dream main course.
So when I was growing up, my favourite meal was steak and kidney pudding. Chips, peas and gravy from Haggit Chippy in Oldham.
Yeah.
Where every Saturday we used to go and have steak and kidney pudding, chips, peas and gravy. So I would go, if I was going back to my childhood, I would say I'd go to the chip shop.
Lovely.
Just at the roof of my house and have that.
That sounds delicious.
I love a steak and kidney pudding.
Yeah. Nice and moist, a lot of gravy in it. I've had dry ones in the past and it scarred me and I've been upset. But like
It's the ones in foil, in tin foil that they boil or steam in a big pan at the chip shop. So that's what I would do.
What was it like growing up in Oldham?
Oh, I had a brilliant time. Lovely. It was a great place to grow up.
Yeah.
Because it's in the country, Oldham. Mm-hmm. It's surrounded by the Pennines. And at the time, then when I was a bit older, we had a brilliant football team. Because Oldham Athletic had a season ticket to Oldham Athletic. And they were founder members of the Premier League. And now got relegated out of the league.
Really?
Last year.
Yeah. If they keep getting relegated, do they get to the end of time?
I wonder what the lowest level of football is that you could possibly... You're right.
Do they have to play in like a schools league or something?
I don't know where you could go to.
Do you watch them still? Do you support them?
I'm not in Oldham anymore. Uh-huh. But yeah, I do.
Do you want the whole meal for your main? Do you want the chips as well? And you know what I'm going to ask? What sort of chips are they?
No, they're just chips from the chippy now.
Or normal chips?
No, they're not. We've left Mars.
Right.
Do you want to compare the chips so that you'll have the chits still and you've got your chips from the chippy and do you want to compare them to
see... I've just realised that I've got this starter, the starter's chips.
Yes.
Yeah. And then then I've got chips again.
Yeah.
I could go... The other thing we used to do was half chips, half rice and curry sauce.
Wow.
So we graduated to that.
What I would also say is you've picked a steak and kidney pudding, which is probably the worst thing you could eat after you've eaten something that you've grown with your own shit.
Maybe we'll revisit. All right, we'll have smoked salmon to start.
What?
I'm going to reverse that. No, you're right.
The chips. You're shitting
forget
on the fish.
All the Mars. Forget all the Mars thing.
That salmon. You can't shit on a salmon, man.
I've changed my mind. This is a good restaurant.
Now I'm imagining the salmon trying to make it up the water to its birthplace again to lay its eggs, and you're shitting on it. You're the top of the waterfall, dropping some nugs down, and it's avoiding them in the stream. Whoa, this is hard enough.
No, you see, could we go back in time? Mars, about 3.5 to 4 billion years ago, had rivers. Okay. And actually, there's a rover at the moment called the Perseverance rover, which is in a crater called Jezero Crater. And there's a river delta there, and it was a lake bed. And it's currently digging down in the river delta, searching for signs that life existed on Mars. And those samples are going to be brought back to Earth. So we could, because you're a genie, we could go back to Jezero Crater 3.5, 4 billion years ago, and there would be rivers flowing in there. And so we could take the salmon with us, put them in the rivers of Mars, and then we could eat Martian salmon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Martian
pretty cool.
Salmon's
I'm into that.
The starter.
Right, so we've reversed. So we're going Martian smoked salmon.
Yes.
That's
for
nice.
Starter.
Then I can have pudding chips, peas and gravy.
But you afterwards. Want the chips in
No, the
this.
Chips now are just normal chips.
That's normal chips.
So now, I've reversed out of my plan.
Yes.
Is your shit involved in the menu at all?
No. No, okay. It's gone now. So okay. This is good.
We're back
so
to
we're
a
making
traditional
So it's Martian smoked salmon.
Yeah.
How would you like it to be smoked? Is there any way we can bring Mars into the smoking process?
That's a good
and
question.
Smoke on any
because
of
there
planets.
Probably wasn't oxygen in the atmosphere at that point, so you couldn't burn anything to smoke it. You've hit on a problem. Well, we'd have to bring the salmon back. Well, we could smoke it in the restaurant.
It's Fox and Grain,
the
isn't
got
it?
Oxygen in it?
Yeah, we've got stuff in the restaurant. Yeah, yeah.
It's Fox and Grain.
What?
It's the Fox and the Grain in the chicken, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
You take the salmon there, but then you have to bring it back. And it's...
Yeah, but there's nothing else there.
Yeah, have you said
good, salmon?
Good point.
Apart from yourself.
I mean, you've got to take something somewhere is what I meant.
You've got to not eat it.
Yeah, now you've hit on another problem, of course, because now you've pointed out there wouldn't be any oxygen in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Mm. Even if there was water on the surface, then what would the salmon breathe?
So yeah, just
the
just
salmon
die.
Wouldn't live in.
You'd
the
just be
thing.
Chucking a dead salmon in a stream.
Well, it
could
to...
you give it like a helmet, like a little suit?
That's yeah. what I was thinking. Yeah. Maybe a little breathing apparatus yeah. on it.
Submarine.
Yeah. Well, submarine doesn't need. No, submarine would be no use to it because it needs water.
Yeah,
fill the submarine with water.
Inside a submarine.
Well, fill the submarine with water.
Yeah, fill it with water. Fill the submarine with water.
Well, then why do you need the submarine?
And then put the submarine in the river of Mars. And then the salmon can drive around in the submarine, filled with water.
Why not just take the submarine away and give it the breathing apparatus, which was the first.
All right, yeah, okay. Scuba, little scuba suit.
Scuba suit.
Yeah.
It's
scuba
hard, salmon. Though, because, like, I think it'd be quite hard for salmon to learn the sign language required for scuba. Because under the water, they'd have to try and communicate. I think that's quite difficult for a salmon.
Tapping its watch.
Yeah, yeah, doing that A-OK sign and stuff. I think it's quite hard. With its little fins, it's got to use them to go back to its birthplace anyway.
We filmed with a mantis shrimp once, which is this remarkable thing that has the best colour vision of virtually anything on the planet because it uses colours to signal to other mantis shrimps underwater. And as you know, because you dive,
yeah.
then as you go down and down and down, the colour gets more washed out.
Uh-huh.
And so it has a really sensitive vision in order to communicate using colour.
Oh, wow.
So they're remarkable things. There you go.
Do you want one of those as well for starters?
Yeah, mantis shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today's episode of Off Menu is sponsored by Aura. James, are you ready to win Mother's Day?
I am, Ed. I want to cement my reputation as the best gift giver in the family. I'm going to give my mom an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
May I say, James, I absolutely love the class and elegance with which you use the word mom, because this is for US listeners.
All of your moms deserve a good Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos.
Yeah, I think your mum's going to love looking back on your childhood memories, seeing what you're up to today, seeing what you were up to back in the day, and even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving, James.
Ed, answer me this. Who is the best gift giver in your life?
I'd probably say my wife is a very good gift giver. Not that my mom is not a fantastic gift giver, but my wife's very good at little surprise things. She says, I've only got you a few things, and then there'll be little surprises, things that we've seen throughout the rest of the year. I'll say to my wife, I like that, and then I forget about it. And then on the day, there's some lovely little gifts there for me that remind us of the year that we've just spent together.
Oh, if you like being reminded of stuff, may I suggest photographs?
That's a very good point, James. I think we should get ourselves an Aura digital picture frame and put some of our wedding photos on them.
Right now, Ed, Aura has a great deal for Mom's Day, Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code OFFMENU at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Dream side dish, then.
Well, maybe that's the shit potatoes.
Then. I think that's the shit potatoes.
We've got chips. You can't have a potato side with chips, can you?
Well, you can if you want. Well, you can prepare the shit potatoes in another way.
And the mushy peas a side dish. So it's
Yeah, you can have that as your side dish. Yeah. They rarely come up.
Yeah, rarely.
And that's weird because I think mushy peas are the most Martian-looking food.
They're very Martian-looking food.
They're very
they?
Star Trek, aren't they?
Mm.
Yeah, from the 60s Star Trek. It's sort of green sludge that people eat, yeah.
I mean, they are nice.
Yes.
But when I used to work in a kitchen, if you've ever opened a cold industrial-sized tin of mushy peas because you work in a kitchen, the smell of that really puts you off them.
Yeah.
I can eat them now, but it's just because it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
But, like, you used to, like, smell of a thousand guffs. You just open it up and it would hit you. And you're like, well, that just smells like someone has... That really does smell like someone's made you've never, with their own shit.
You've never had a plate of chits, mate, yeah.
Yeah, if I had a plate of chits, I'm sure it tastes just as bad. I don't know how Matt Damon did it. Good actor.
They do have them, though, in sort of restaurants in London, and but they're called something else, aren't they? They're always called minted peas.
Yeah.
But they're still mushy peas.
So who are they kidding?
I love a mushy pea.
Yeah?
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Would you rank it above the garden peas?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive fan of garden peas.
No?
No. They're a boring vegetable.
Yeah,
I think the mushy peas, when you get them from the chippy and they're in like a polystyrene cup with a little lid, and you open it up, and they're all just sat in there, all nestled together. Yes. It's exciting.
That's the side dish.
Yeah,
that
a polystyrene cup of mushy peas.
Yeah,
see, the polystyrene's put me off now.
Why
squeaky?
Oh, you don't like polystyrene?
No, too squeaky.
Has to squeak.
No thanks. Whatever's in there's not worth it.
I don't know. What would you have yours in then?
Good question. I would probably like mine in a thermos.
A thermos flask?
Yeah.
But they can squeak when you take the top off.
No. Not the same way that polystyrene does. I'd unscrew it. That'd be the exact temperature that I wanted. And then I'd either pour it onto my plate or I'd glug it out the flask.
I don't think mushy peas are the right consistency to pour or glug.
What?
How do you feel about that, Brian? Do you think you could glug mushy peas? I think you need to spoon them out, really, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think you could glug mushy peas. No. There's another challenge.
I think they'd move fast enough.
Some of them are different consistency, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
It is true. So you could have more liquid kind of mushy peas.
You know when you see astronauts, like, they're showing off when they, like, squeeze their food in the air and then chase it around and catch it with their mouth?
Brilliant.
And that is showing off, isn't it?
I love it when they do that.
Mushy peas are that consistency all the time, I think. They feel like they could float away and you could chase them.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever been in zero gravity and eaten food?
I have been in zero gravity, actually.
And, like, chased a Malteser?
We did a zero-G flight, which was just... We were supposed to be filming. We were supposed to be in professional. And I was supposed to be talking about Einstein's great insight that led him... He called it the happiest thought of his life that led him to general relativity in 1915, was to realise that when you're falling, gravity has gone away. It's not there at all, which is completely different to Newton. Right, which so the reason Einstein would say that astronauts float inside the space station, he said if they get some water or some mushy peas, whatever it is, it just stays there, is because there are no forces acting on anything. Everything just stays where it is, which is a completely different view of gravity. And so Einstein, he called that the happiest thought of his life. So we were supposed to be doing that. So we were filming. But the point is, when you go into zero G, you just laugh because it's so incredible that suddenly you're weightless and just floating around like an astronaut. So the whole sequence that we filmed, it's in one of my films, you know, that I made years ago, but it's just basically spinning around and laughing. And then the camera's spinning around because the cameraman's spinning around. And everyone's just the absolutely nonsense. They have no educational value at all. Because I had this romantic idea that I would explain Einstein's general theory of relativity. You only get about 30 seconds or so of weightlessness. Yeah. And then the plane has to go back up again and you get another 30 seconds, another 30 seconds. So I had it all planned out. I had these 30 seconds little bits and I would film and it would be a very coherent explanation of this beautiful theory. And but it wasn't. It was just like the just pissing around basically in zero G. It's a wonderful thing to do. It's incredible.
Einstein's legend. He's a legend. Fair to say?
Yeah.
OG. The OG scientist.
No.
Huh?
Probably not the OG scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
There's probably scientists before Einstein, weren't there, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's the OG.
Newton. Newton, Galileo.
Him. Like Galileo. But like Einstein, number one.
It's hard. It's difficult, you know. It's difficult to rank these people. Mm. Newton was clearly a genius.
An apple fell on his head, Brian.
Yeah, and you know the so Newton would have said that the apple fell on his head because there's a force between the apple and the earth, right? So that was his great insight, that's Newton's theory of gravity. Einstein would have said exactly the opposite. Einstein would have said, "No, Isaac, you accelerated up to headbutt the apple."
Wow,
it's completely the opposite view, because when the apple's falling off the tree, in Einstein's picture, the apple is it's not moving in a real sense. It's not accelerating. It's just minding its own business. The thing that's accelerating is the ground. It's a completely different. So the reason everyone's listening now and we're sat on chairs, we're getting pressed into the chair, Newton would say because there's a force pulling us down towards the centre of the earth. But Einstein would say that what's actually happening is our trajectory through space should be towards the centre of the earth. That would be just free fall. So we should be freely falling. And the ground's in the way. Or the chair's in the way. So the chair's exerting a force on us that's stopping us.
Oh, that one makes me feel weird.
Freely through space.
The chair's
and so we're accelerating. So you're being pressed into the chair in the same way you're pressed into the back of the back of your car seat when you're accelerating your car.
Then why isn't my face all pulled back?
Well, it is. It sort of is. It's at 1G.
Yeah, I hate it. So you're,
oh, no.
So Einstein would say, in this room now, it's called the equivalence principle. So he would say that if there's no windows in the room, basically you can't see out, then you could not tell. There's nothing you can do to tell whether we're just accelerating with a big rocket at 1G through space or we're sat on the surface of the Earth. Exactly the same sensation.
What's the happiest thought you've ever had?
That's a good question. It's understanding something. I find that sometimes I'm quite slow to understand things. I'm writing a book at the moment on black holes. There's loads of black holes in the live show. And they're really difficult to understand. And so you can sit there, or I can sit there for months trying to understand something. And it's that my happiest thoughts are when it suddenly becomes obvious. Uh-huh. It's a strange sensation, actually, because it clearly isn't obvious, because you sit there for months trying to understand it. But once you understand something or find your own way of understanding something, then it becomes obvious. And those are happy moments. Mm. I always say that to students, you know, that whether they're at school or at university, that some things are really hard to understand. And a lot of people, I think one of the problems people have when they say, I can't do maths or I can't do science, I can't do physics, what that really is just giving up too early. And you have to be persistent. And if you're persistent, there's a great reward at the end of it. So it's not, you don't have to be, you know, Einstein, I mean, even Einstein, there's a great story about Einstein when he was at a school and everyone's, you know, going, it's Einstein, you know. And he said, when I was your age, I was no Einstein, which is true. Right, he didn't know that stuff when he was 6 years old, but he spent a lot of time thinking about it.
Ed, same question as you?
Oh, happiest thought.
Yeah. Be honest.
Still thinking about Mies.
Yeah. No, Ed.
I don't think I think very often, you know.
No?
No.
That's fair enough.
What's your happiest thought?
Ice cream or sex.
Yeah.
Brian, your drink...
That's not a thought, that's a question.
I think about it all the time. Brian, your dream drink.
Dream drink. I used to like Guinness a lot, but as I've got older, the number of drinks I can drink without getting headache has reduced. So I'm pretty much reduced to... I like white wine now, actually. I really particularly like white wine, and like champagne.
It's another proof that things don't only get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I drink like 2 or 3 pints of Guinness now, it's not good.
That's the closest drink to a black hole?
Yeah.
You say?
That's why you love it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
The darkest drink.
And if you drink 3 of them or more, time ceases to exist?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. So we go Guinness then, because it's a good story.
There we go.
I wish I'd
sold it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guinness. It's like drinking a black hole.
Yeah. Oh, I love Guinness.
If you could drink a black hole.
That's my nicest thought.
Oh, yeah. It's drinking Guinness.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we found it.
Yeah. And sex.
Yes. We love sex.
It's really interesting you ask what's the dumbest episode, Brian, because we've been the dumbest we've ever been on this episode.
Yeah.
Well, easily. It's just, balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about balance. Yeah.
If like I use my genie powers to get a black hole and make it into a drink, would you drink it?
I'm trying to think. See, the thing about a black hole. Yeah. So if it's what's called an eternal black hole, so one that's been around forever.
Yeah.
That's a technical point for the listeners that are well versed in these things. Uh-huh. Eternal black hole. Then let's say it's really small, so it would fit in your mouth, right? A tiny little tiny black hole. You could hold it in your hands, and if it's a spinning black hole called a Kerr black hole, you'll be holding an infinite number of infinite universes in your hand. So that it's called a Kerr Wonderland.
Yeah.
So there is very, very weird internal geometry, even in an eternal non-spinning black hole, which is called a Schwarzschild black hole, then there is a wormhole in there connecting two universes.
Right.
So the science fiction wormholes,
yeah.
Einstein discovered them in 1935 with a colleague called Rosen, Einstein-Rosen bridge wormhole. So the inside black holes, if they've existed forever, is an infinite complexity of space-time. So that's what you'd be drinking.
What would happen if you drank that?
Yeah. What do you think would happen to you?
But the thing about really very small black holes is that they're also very hot.
Oh.
So tiny microscopic black holes.
So you'd have to blow on it.
Extremely hot, and they evaporate away very quickly. So that wouldn't help. It might make you feel better, but it would do nothing to the black hole.
Yeah. Nothing to it.
So it might be quite dangerous. It depends how big it was, how massive it was.
Well, a pint.
A pint of a black hole,
so
you'd be in real trouble.
Like, condense it into a liquid pint.
So if the event horizon of the black hole was the same size as a pint glass, then it would be colossally massive,
right.
That black hole. It would be billions of tons. So you wouldn't be able to lift the glass up.
Straw?
You wouldn't be able to... Straw.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're meant to be getting rid of those these days, but like... yeah. Give you a straw?
It wouldn't help, would it?
Wouldn't help at all.
No. Because if you put the straw across the event horizon of the black hole, then you wouldn't be able to suck anything out of it. You'd have to suck faster than the speed of light in order to get anything.
Stop it. I'm having one of my nice thoughts again.
Yeah.
No one has ever thought
about it. Just like that to Ed. He loves it. It's his happy thoughts. His happy thought just got even happier.
I was just thinking, actually, this is like... No one has ever considered this physics.
No, it's pretty exciting.
In the history of physics.
And you could get us into some labs to pose these questions.
You couldn't get the straw across the event horizon. The problem with approaching the event horizon of a black hole is when viewed from outside, time stops on the horizon.
Right.
So you never see anything fall in.
What if we've discovered a black hole you can drink?
Yeah. But then it's interesting about the whole time stopping thing. Think about Guinness, because that's all about tick follows tock.
Yes, if the glass...
And good things come to those who wait.
You'd have to wait a long time.
Yeah, wait a long time. Time stopped.
Yeah. So if the glass of Guinness was the black hole,
then
you have to get your hand to it.
Uh-huh.
And as you move your hand towards the black hole, then from your vantage point, then time slows down and it would freeze on the horizon. So I think you can't pick the glass up. If it's a black hole,
wouldn't we even be able to pick it
up? Notwithstanding the fact it's very heavy, but we'll forget about that.
Yeah.
Even then, if you've got a place
you'd
on
never
the
reach
horizon where time stops, you'd never reach it.
So does the same apply for the person who's trying to draw the little shamrock in the foam on the top? Would they have a problem doing that?
If they're inside the event horizon with the Guinness, then no. But then from outside, you'd never know whether they'd done it.
Would you drink it or not?
Well, we haven't established that you could physically drink it.
Yeah, yeah. If you could.
We think there are physical problems.
Yeah, I think physically you can't. By the sound of things.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to say...
The white wine?
Knowing what we know about Einstein's theory of general relativity,
then
you're not going to be able to drink a black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose you could ingest a small enough one. But as I said, it would evaporate away very quickly.
I think you can drink it.
Small enough.
New cocktail.
Yeah.
It's called a plug-in baby.
Still thinking about music.
Yeah.
So let's go for a glass of champagne, shall we?
Let's make this. But it's good to consider these things, isn't it?
Yeah.
And work out whether they're possible. Yeah, we've learnt a lot
about relativity.
Any particular type of champagne?
I would go for a Dom Ruinart, because I like Ruinart because it's 100% Chardonnay, Blanc de Blanc. I would go for the vintage Ruinart, which is Dom Ruinart, and I'd probably go for 2008.
This is good. We've never had this specific a choice.
Again, it's weird. Every time Brian mentions something that's like time related, like he used to make 2008, I'm just like, there must be a scientific reason why it's 2008.
No, I guess it was a good year. Yeah, if it's a good year and it's a good vintage, yeah. I suppose that is a scientific reason in a way, because so many things have to coincide to make it a good vintage for wine, right?
Yeah. I once talked to a winemaker and they said that the grape is the means by which the season and the land talk to you.
Oh, I love that.
Which is beautiful. So it's the landscape, but also the season. Did it rain in late August? And what was the season like? And all the messages are in there. And then the grape and the wine are the medium by which they talk to you.
I love it.
I think there just seems to be other jobs, like scientist or like this vineyard owner or whatever. They're just like, so much happiness and joy in it. And we're comedians and it's just awful.
As ever, you speak for yourself.
Yes. Your dream dessert?
Black Hole Gatto.
Black Hole Gatto.
Same problem though, Ed.
Yeah,
I think you wouldn't be able to even pick it up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I like dark chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like dessert too much, actually. I don't like sweet things so much. But I like dark chocolate.
How dark are we talking?
Very.
Dark. 100%?
Dark. Not matter. Quite. No, I go for about 80.
Nice.
Dark matter. Yes.
Yeah. We don't know if that exists. We suspect it does. The Large Hadron Collider has just switched on, actually, again. And it's now looking for dark matter. Really seriously trying to, because we thought we'd have discovered it. That dark matter is something that we think is out there in the universe because we see its gravitational effects.
Uh-huh.
And so we're pretty convinced there's something out there which is a kind of particle, a subatomic particle that we haven't yet discovered. And we thought LHC at CERN would discover it, but it hasn't done. But we're switching on again with much more capability. So that's one of the things at the top of the list.
Do you ever worry there's some things you just shouldn't go looking for?
Like what?
Because you'll wake something up and it'll be evil. Dark matter seems to me, leave that stuff well alone.
Yeah.
No, but if it hadn't been there, assuming it's there, so we're pretty sure it is, assuming it's there, then it played a central role in the formation of galaxies in the early universe.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't exist.
Yeah, but it doesn't want to be found.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find it.
Well, it's just a particle, though, so it doesn't have wants.
It feels like it's going to be a Venom situation.
Yeah, and addressing Ed's original question, what if it is evil?
Well, it's like saying, what if a grain of sand is evil?
Good point.
Well, is it?
Well, answer that, then.
Well, it's not. It's a grain of sand. It's got no consciousness, nothing. It's just a grain of sand. So dark matter would be like very small grains of sand. There's no possibility at all that it could be evil. So we can rule that out.
What if you're in a lab, right? And one of the scientists is looking in the microscope at some sands that you've got from the beach. And they look up and their face is ashen white. And you're like, everything okay? And they went, Brian, this sand is not like any sand I've seen in my life before. And you say, what are you talking about? And say, there is evil in this sand. It is evil. And they say that to you.
Yeah.
What's next step?
Sack them.
Yeah.
Throw them out.
Fair enough.
And every scientific society they're a member of, just throw them out.
Yeah.
But then we know from films, they're the ones that are right.
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum, yeah.
Life finds a way. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, actually. Well, interestingly, so Mars is a good question, because we think that life may have begun on Mars 3.5 billion years ago because the conditions were right. And we're pretty certain that it probably isn't there today. We're pretty certain it wouldn't be. We tend to look for signs that life existed. But it's interesting that we do think there may be water subsurface. Uh-huh. And if there is, then that life finds a way. You know, it does seem that if life can survive, then it will. That does seem to be the case.
Yeah.
So maybe. I go with life finds a way. That's not anything to do with sand being evil, though, is it? Because sand isn't alive, because it's sand.
Okay.
So,
but evil is like, it's a force, isn't it? It's just like gravity is.
It's a property of living things, isn't it? A property of consciousness.
It's a spirit.
Mm.
No,
I'm vice versa.
Yeah.
No. I'm either way on this.
Yeah, yeah.
I see your point, Brian. I see James.
You brought it up. Well, how come it's me versus Brian now? I'm back. I'm yes and in your thing.
But he hasn't got a point.
For a laugh.
What? No, I'm saying what if... Because dark matter clearly doesn't want to be found. Well, so no, what if we... Are you worried?
No, I'm objecting to the use of the term want.
But have we found it?
Well, that's not because it doesn't want to be found, is it? Because it can't want.
But what if it is just like venom?
It's just a subatomic particle. So subatomic particles don't want anything.
Yeah, they don't want to be found.
No, they don't. There's no such concept as want, is it? It's just a basic building block of matter.
What if you touch it and it goes all the way up your arm and then you're evil?
Yeah, goes up your arm and now you're evil.
Well, it wouldn't do that.
How do you know? You've not found it.
No, because it's a subatomic...
What if you find it and it is evil and then you've unleashed that on the world?
Let's just think about a grain of sand because it's easier to visualize, which is a lot of subatomic particles, right? So in principle, a grain of sand has got more possibilities open to it than just a single subatomic particle.
So they're more likely to be evil than the dark matter.
No, even then, go and get a grain of sand and have a look at it and see if you think it's got sufficient complexity to be as intelligent as you.
Uh-huh. But what if they were all loads of sand, not just one grain?
Yeah,
loads of sand.
Yeah. And also, I'm gonna just tiptoe back a little bit. I've never had the phrase "as intelligent as you" said with such stank.
Well, I was teasing.
You put a real spin on that when you put as intelligent as you.
Yeah, fair enough.
I thought someone would pick it up. Yeah, you're comedians. It's an open net, isn't it? And you didn't go for it.
Yeah,
I'm just worried about the sand. In all honesty.
It is quite worrying.
It's a good question. So you could ask, look at a human brain. So that's remarkably a collection of atoms and molecules that can think. So you could ask, how complex does something have to be to have that property? I mean, we as I said, it's a reasonable assumption that nowhere else in the Milky Way galaxy are there collections of atoms that can think, because it's a big ask.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. But all these things that you're talking about, so evil or love or fear or science or music and art, all those things are things that emerge from these remarkable collections of atoms.
Mm.
So you could ask the question, how much stuff do you need and how complex does it have to interact together to produce those, what we call emergent properties? The answer is we don't know. It's one of the great questions. So it's not an entirely stupid question to say, if grains of sand could interact with each other and you could build them into some enormous structure that could process information,
Spider-Man 2.
Then would it become, there is a
Sandman.
Sandman. Yeah, Sandman. I think that's a scientifically inaccurate.
Thomas Hayden
as well.
Church.
I think someone should have said something. I was a consultant on a science fiction film once with Danny Boyle, going back to Danny Boyle. And the Beatles film. So he directed a film called Sunshine.
Yes! I love Sunshine.
Well, audio commentary on the Sunshine DVD is me.
Is it?
Yeah,
well,
and that was years ago.
I've got it on DVD. I'm going to go home and listen to it.
So you never listen to those commentary. Yeah. I did a commentary, and then Danny did a commentary. And that was before I'd been on telly or anything. It was the first thing I'd done, Horizon, which is one of the on BBC Two.
Yeah.
It was years ago. So it was the first one I'd done. And they saw it, Danny saw it, and thought, he looks a bit like this character that I've got in Sunshine, which is the Cillian Murphy character, how he envisaged him to be.
Uh-huh.
So they got in touch and said, do you want to come and work
That's
on the
so
film?
That's so cool.
And so I did work on the film and I did the commentary. It's a great film. I think it's an underrated masterpiece.
It is. It is underrated. I think just because it's like at the end, it changes genre. And that always people find that difficult in films.
Yeah.
But it's great.
Well, Alex Garland wrote it. He wrote 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
The Beach.
And those great films, directed his own brilliant films as well. Did Ex Machina.
Ex Machina is a fantastic film. Isn't it?
Fantastic. Here we go. Now we're all on the same page.
We've changed genre right at the end of the podcast.
Changed genre right at the end of the podcast. It's a film podcast.
I want to get to the bottom of this dessert, though.
Dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate. How would you like this dark chocolate presented? And also, don't feel like you have to have a dessert. If you don't want anything sweet for dessert, there's always other options.
I also like cheese on toast for dessert.
Ooh, what the fuck?
That happens.
Do you want
in certain restaurants?
A rare bit, a rare nice bit, rare
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
St. John, a fantastic restaurant, has a wonderful rare bit on the dessert menu.
Yeah, and I like that. I often go that way, actually, because I don't like sweet things.
Yeah.
So I often go for the rare bit.
Well, this is the dream restaurant. If you want to have a lovely bit of rare bit.
Rare bit with, yeah. Worcester sauce on it.
Yeah, lovely. Uh-oh.
What? Is it?
James is our resident dessert head, and he doesn't like it when people pick something savoury for dessert.
No. After all that chat about what isn't evil, let me tell you, Brian Cox, a savoury dessert, scientifically, evil. And anyone who orders one falls into that category as well. You and that rabbit may as well have been touched by the venom that you don't want to find in space.
The rabbit can't be evil. We've gone through this.
Yeah.
It's not evil, Brian.
It's not sentient. No one thinks that rabbit is sentient. You can't have a conversation with cheese on toast.
Sometimes it feels like the cheese is so mature it's having a chat with you.
Yeah.
What? Don't even joke. Someone just ordered cheese on toast as a dessert.
I think it's amazing. No one's ever ordered cheese on toast before.
Sauce to make it even more savoury.
This is perfect. I love this.
We've sat here. Listen. We have sat here and we have indulged this man in every crackpot theory he's been throwing up at us. I draw the line and cheese on toast for dessert. I have grinned and bared it for every single thing he's gone on about. None of it made any fucking sense. I do not let this go.
What happens if we go sweet for the starter then?
We're making that salmon swim through sugar now? That salmon's gone through enough?
Is that even worse?
I'd feel better about that if the starter changed.
Are we changing the
again.
Starter again?
No. Let's stick
to your guns, Brian. You know.
I tell you what, Brian. There's one of your courses that should be shat on. Is this fucking
I can't stress enough. Brian was never shitting onto the potatoes.
I'm going to squat over this.
You're going to fertilise it, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to fertilise it. I hope you like it fertilised.
What's the other one with the dates with the bacon wrapped around it? What's that called?
Devils
on horseback.
Yeah.
Devils on horseback.
Evil.
I mean,
the clue's in the name, Brian. The devil's there. God. Right, I'm going to read your menu back to you now. I'm not happy about it. Sparkling water, poppadoms for poppadoms or bread. Starter, we've settled on Martian smoked salmon. But shout out, honourable mention to the chips in the chits. Main course, steak and kidney pudding, chips and gravy from the Oldham Chip Shop. Side dish of mushy peas. Drink 2008
Domruna
champagne.
Goes very well with steak and kidney pudding. Yeah. So many a sommelier will say that.
And the dessert. Proof that you don't have to be sentient to be evil. Rabbit with Worcester. I can't even believe I'm reading that. This is a man of science. He's chosen a savoury for a dessert. He goes on about all the laws of the universe.
Yeah.
And he has a savoury dessert.
This is great ammo. Our smartest guest ever picks cheese for dessert.
Oh, it is. You're playing into his hands. This is a constant debate on the podcast. And now he's going to go. Brian Cox said, have a savoury dessert. It's going to make... Oh, you've got to be joking.
I'll go for a sauterne.
This is the worst thing that could have happened.
Will that make him feel better if I had a sauterne with it?
Yeah, that might make you feel a bit better. Sauterne, a dessert one, the best dessert one.
No, it doesn't make me feel better.
Tokay. Go for a Tokay.
You have a Tokay?
I'm just going to have to live with this for a while. I'm going to have to think a lot about it. It feels bad.
Yeah.
Didn't see it coming at the end there.
I loved it.
Oh, you loved it.
It's magnificent.
I saw it coming on the horizon.
Goddamn rabbit. I cannot believe that's the dessert.
Brian, quickly before we go, Dara O'Brien says you're friends. Is that true or is he lying?
No, it's true. It's very true. Yeah.
Be honest.
No, is he?
How Dara, often is that we bringing you up and going like, please be my friend?
We had such great time. Stargazing Live, it was just a great, fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, every time we see him, he's like, oh, Brian Cox.
No, he doesn't stop talking about you. And you've not mentioned him once. We've had to bring him up to you.
Yeah.
But
right at the end, I gave you enough chance to bring him up.
He's on this podcast. Benito says the edit was mainly editing out him talking about you all the time.
I was really hoping to make fun of him more, but you're too nice for that, Brian.
Yeah, trying to get you to make fun of him.
Thank you very much for coming to the Dream Restaurant, Brian.
Yes, thank you, Brian.
I'd like to say it was a pleasure, but the end, it soured at the end, didn't it? With the rabbit, yeah. I messed it up.
Yeah. I'm absolutely livid. Thank God we're heading towards the centre of a black hole and time will soon be over.
Right, we ruined that. We had a great opportunity to chat to a genuinely clever, intelligent man, one of the science minds of our generation, James.
Yes.
And we ruined it, didn't we?
No. We asked, but people are too afraid to ask scientists. We got the proper questions.
That
proper
stuff,
answers.
I wasn't messing around about that stuff about dark matter. It's called dark matter. Why are we fucking around with it?
I think it's about time scientists addressed evil.
Yes.
And you can tell he was shook.
Yeah, he was shook.
He was shook when we were asking him about it.
He was shook to his molten core.
Yeah. I think we did a good job there.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Sorry. I was just worried.
You got to ask the big questions.
Yeah.
We asked him.
Yeah.
And it's not our fault. He couldn't give us a definitive answer.
Yes. But he likes that, apparently. He likes not knowing stuff because it means there's always stuff to discover, yes. Which I liked. He didn't say Space Raiders.
No, so we didn't kick him out.
No, we didn't kick him out. Good. Don't forget to go and see Brian Cox on his World Arena Tour. Where can people find out about that, James?
BrianCoxLive.co.uk.
Go and
check. Horizons is what the show is called.
Go and check it out.
21st century space odyssey to take audiences on a dazzling cinematic journey. Very exciting. And as you heard him say, there's going to be stuff added to the tour as it goes along as well. As new science is released.
New material, baby.
Yeah. And comics are doing new material. It can be quite scary. When scientists are doing new material, it's the best stuff.
I wouldn't do it on this tour, though. I'd save it for my next tour.
Yeah?
Yeah. Stupid to do new material on a current tour.
Yeah.
Wasting it.
Do that in the pubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Do that in the pubs and clubs.
Go and update people on the new science, you know, at the Bill Murray or something.
Yeah, then save it for the O2 when you've honed it.
I'm on tour, of course, as well. I take people on a journey through space and time.
You do,
in my show Electric. Well, yeah, in that they walk in to a space and I'm on for some time.
Yeah.
Come and see me anyway, edgamble.co.uk for details. Big shows all over the place.
And please, get my book, James Acaster's Guide to Quitting Social Media, Being the Best You Can Be and Curing Yourself of Loneliness, Volume 1, wherever you get your books.
Thank you very much to people who've been sending us stuff. We've had some lovely lovely food from some wonderful food producers, including, rather appropriately for this episode, James, Dark Matter's Brownies.
Mad that we didn't remember that during the episode. Actually.
We should have told him. We'd spend all this bloody time looking for it. We've been sent it, mate.
Yeah, we've already got some in the kitchen.
Well, let me tell you, it's not evil. It's brownies.
It's not evil, mate. You should go through and get some.
Dark Matter's Brownies, of course, sent us some because Kiri had Dark Matter's Brownies on her dream menu.
Thank you, Kiri.
Thank you, Kiri.
Much appreciated.
Much appreciated.
Maybe we'll get sent some actual dark matter from the cosmos.
Oh, wow.
Brian Cox mentioned it.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Some space treats.
But then it would attach itself to us.
And then we turn into Venom.
With Venom.
Yeah, that's what I took from the conversation.
Yep. Speaking of stuff that we've got because guests have shouted it out, Buxton shouted out, Adam Buxton shouted out Goo Desserts.
Goo.
We've got a bunch of thems.
Yes, please.
Great.
I felt like I was living at my mum's again. That was our treat, Goo Desserts.
Oh, was it?
When I saw she bought the goos.
I thought your mum's treats were putting muffins
That was later on when we were both trying to be healthy and she bought some mini white chocolate and lemon muffins. And then she was like, no, we're just going to eat these too quickly, put them in the freezer, and then we worked out they're just as delicious if you eat them rock hard. The goo's great, though. Absolutely great.
Love the goo. Love the ramekins. Thank you.
And also Treat Kitchen Sweets.
They're very nice. I've been picking at them in the office.
Yeah.
Little sneakily when you guys aren't looking.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I like them a lot.
Why do you think you have to hide this from us, James?
Well, because it's, you know, you'll look at me and roll your eyes and go, oh, there, of course he is.
Yeah, it's not a shock to me. It's not a surprise.
No, but that's what I'd rather surprise people and then shock them than have people go, ugh, there he is eating the sweets in the corner.
But they're nice. You like them?
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again next week with another scintillating episode of the Off Menu Podcast.
A universe of food.
Blah, 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 blah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell. If you enjoy, there's another podcast just coming out. Oh, no, the podcast is out now.
Yeah. If people have enjoyed Off Menu, will they enjoy Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains? I don't know.
There's a bit of crossover. We talk about a couple of food issues. We talk about cutlery, and that's near food. We reckon it's out now. Not soon, it's now.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. If you like James and if you love Ed, you might get a kick out of this. But yeah, again, no pressure. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.